Queridos hermanos y hermanas, dear friends, when the gospel describes the crowd around Jesus as murmuring and as complaining, well, we understand that because we all do our own share of complaining and murmuring all the way through life. We complain about the kids. We love them, but we complain about them. They never put things back or whatever. We complain about our parents. We love them, but they don't understand. We complain about the neighbors. We complain about work, often under our breath. We complain about the weather. We complain about being taken for granted or not appreciated. We complain about politics, even though we might end up watching a debate or other, but we still complain. Fact of the matter is, we do a lot of complaining. I remember once, 9 years ago, being part of the Vatican delegation to the World Council of Churches down in Porto Alegre, Brazil. And it was there for 2 weeks. It was a wonderful experience. I was sitting at one occasion next to a priest, and as I looked at him, never met him before, I realized he was a very handsome African-Brazilian priest, that he was saying his breviary, and I looked at that and saw black Brazilian. He was praying in German. That made me smile with the combination. And then he stopped to talk a little bit. So he said he recognized I was from the United States. And so he said, in the United States, we spoke in Italian. It was the common language we had. He said, in the United States, do the priests complain about the bishops? Do they lamentano? Do they complain about the bishops? I said, si. He said, and do the bishops complain about the priests? I said, si. He said, and do the people complain about both the bishops and the priests? I said, si. And he went on to say, allora, so, tutti lamentano, everybody complains. So it must be the fifth mark of the church. It's one holy, Catholic, apostolic, and complaining. It must be the two church because everybody's complaining. Well, it comes to mind again with that wonderful story about the gospel and the people who are complaining about Jesus. It wasn't that he claimed to be bread. That wasn't the issue. We all say, referring to someone or other, or some situation, well, that'll give them something to chew on. Or we say, that's food for thought. Or we say about somebody else's idea, that's a half-baked idea if I ever heard one. You know, we do talk about ideas and thought as bread. So that's not surprising. They didn't complain about that. What they complained about, first of all, is that Jesus had a heavenly origin, something bigger than they could understand or comprehend. They knew his family. They knew who they were. But that he claimed to have an even more profound origin was something that they found troubling. The gospel passage insists not only that Jesus had a heavenly origin, but that he is capable of changing our lives and even changing the way in which we think. And that's just the heart of the matter today, that the gift of faith is something that changes the way we think. The gospel says we need God's grace to work in our minds if we're ever going to understand the words of Jesus. No one comes to me, you heard it a moment ago, no one comes to me unless the Father draws him. unless the Father somehow gives us the grace to take a second look at things and see them differently. Our experience changes us. We know that. As we grow, suddenly we find that we like some foods we hated as kids. Liver suddenly turns out to be not so bad. Experience changes us that we find that some people we didn't like initially, we do kind of like a lot. Experience changes us when we start doing things we never would have done before. Love changes us. We love somebody and we end up going shopping or going to football games or who knows what that we never would have done before. Love changes us. But so does faith change us when we see things differently. And that's a great mystery. It's a great mystery because one of the most fascinating courses I took in the seminary was a whole semester on the act of faith. It was taught by a Spanish Jesuit. And what he did was help us understand that when we make an act of faith, we put our lives on the line freely for something we don't have full evidence for. It's not like mathematics, where 2 and 2 is 4. It's always 4. It's not 17 one day and 32 another day and then 4 or 5. Math is, you know, it's set. You don't argue with it. But faith, we have to be free. And we're presented with a vision of the world that's what we see but what we don't see yet. And we're invited to enter that world in such a way that we're changed and the world around us is changed. And we begin to share in some mysterious way the life of the next age, eternal life, the life of the next age. It's not always so simple. There are some wonderful, wonderful men and women who would love to have faith, and they struggle with it. And they ask God for the gift of faith, and they don't find it. They struggle, they look, they search, they say, yeah, it kind of makes good sense, but I'm not there yet. People who want to believe, but for whatever sets of reasons, can't do it. Good people. Sometimes teenagers go through that process. But that's also part of the mystery, that it is a gift. It's a gift given to us at that moment when we can best take advantage of it and allow ourselves to be changed. So today, on this wonderful feast in the middle of July, we're asked to believe that the bread around which we gather is the presence of God. We're asked to believe that we are changed into the presence of God. We're asked to believe that the celebration of the Eucharist is the beginning of the next stage. Maybe that's the value of community, that we do gather with people of different relationships to these mysteries. They help us believe, we help them believe in good days and more difficult days, but we stand before the mystery of God, both grateful for the gift of faith and asking that we might have that gift at a deeper level. That's what we celebrate this morning. The Gospel of the Lord.